Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, welcome. What a day. But before you run off to the pantry to cheer yourself up, stay with us because we're going to talk today about food, one of my favorite topics. And let me tell you who my guests are today. We're going to look at food from three different angles. My first guest is Lisa Bennett from the Center for Eco-Literacy. And she's joining us to talk about an inspiring sustainability movement that's sweeping across America. I'll tell you more about that in just a moment. My second guest is an expert on gluten-free cooking that's not only delicious, but it's inexpensive, important in today's economy. And it's quick and easy to fix. You know, there's nothing nicer than coming home on a cold winter's day to the smell of cooking that just is waiting to be served. And Stephanie O'Day is the author of Make It Fast, Cook It Slow. All of her recipes, from hot pumpkin spice latte to stuffed portobello mushrooms, applesauce chicken, Cajun pulled pork, they're all cooked in a slow pot. And she's going to talk to us about that. You wouldn't believe, she started this off as a little hobby, and you would not believe where this has taken her. We'll find out more later on. And then joining us around 12:35, my third guest, Dr. Susan Albers, focuses on a different aspect of food, a very timely topic in light of the recent announcement that 70% of us here in America are overweight. If you use food to calm yourself, if you use food to quell your anxiety or to cheer yourself up, you'll want to stay and hear what Dr. Susan Albers has to say. She's written a book called 50 Ways to Soothe Yourself Without Food. And very quickly, before we jump into today's show, I want to, since I'm not going to be here on the actual day of Mr. Eric Ryder's birthday, Mr. Eric Ryder, of course, is our studio producer, board engineer extraordinaire. I want to wish you a very, very happy birthday for the end of the week. And I hope
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that.
I want the whole week filled with celebration here, okay?
Well, we'll try. The birthday's on Friday the 13th this year, so
right.
You know it's going to be lucky, you know? Can't wait for that. And you were so kind. You brought me in a box of cupcakes today on the day that we're talking about 50 ways to soothe yourself about food. So
yes.
Yeah. I'm glad I got those before the conversation so I was able to whip those down and soothe myself. And now I'll find the other ways for the rest of the week.
And you don't know how hard it was not to dig into that box of cupcakes.
You were so nice. Thank you so much.
Because they are delicious. Well, enjoy. Enjoy. All right, so let me get to my guest is waiting on the line patiently here. Lisa Bennett joins us from the Center for Eco-Literacy. She's a former fellow at Harvard University's Center on Press, Politics, and Public Policy in the John F. Kennedy School of Government. She's written for many publications, including the New York Times and the Christian Science Monitor. And she's joining me today to talk about a movement of educators, parents, and students and how that's remaking K-12 education across America. Lisa Bennett, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be with you, Vicki.
So there's a book that goes with this movement, actually documents this movement. It's called Smart by Nature, Schooling for Sustainability. I believe the primary writer on this is Michael K. Stone, who's at the Center for Eco-Literacy. But you've also had a very heavy hand in this. You're the director of communications there. Tell us a little bit about this movement and when it started.
Well, you know, the movement has been growing, I would say, over the last 10 to 15 years, most visibly, but it's still a secret in some parts. But what we saw after having been at this work for about 20 years now is that there were enough schools getting going across the country on their own, really. You know, this is like a genuine movement in that it's bubbling up all over the place. It's not something that's happening in response to a federal law or anything like that. You know, it's schools and parents and community members who are seeing the school as a place that offers a number of opportunities to look at issues of sustainability and, you know, the health of our planet and what we're teaching young people about how to relate to nature going forward in a way that's more positive than, you know, some of the ways in which we're doing it right now. And food is one of them. And we've seen, you know, people addressing that by working on improving the lunches in schools, by putting in school gardens and, you know, helping young people see food as something that is not only important in itself and connected to their health and also their academic achievement, but also is has a big environmental effect. So it's very rich as an academic topic.
Yeah, you know, many years ago, well, actually, over the years, I've spoken with Dr. Jane Goodall about three times, I think. I've actually sat down and talked with her. And the last time I sat down and talked with her, she was very adamant that, you know, the single most important thing we can do for the future of our environment is to get our children involved at the grassroots level. And this is exactly what you're trying to do here. Well, not what you're trying, what you are doing.
Yes, and what we're trying to do is to support, you know, schools that are doing this work and also just spread the word so that, you know, we can offer these stories of what's happening, the good news of what's happening at schools across the country, so then other schools and other communities know it's possible, and parents really can start to expect schools to do this.
Yeah. Any idea how many schools are involved right now?
Well, it's, you know, like any real movement, it's a hard thing to measure, but we do know a few things, that if you look, you know, so a few different ways to look at how schools can tackle environmental sustainability, and the building is one, you know, is it a green building? And, you know, your part of the country, of course, is pretty good in that regard. And what we know there about schools is that there have been about 2,000 schools right now that are either certified as green or on their way to being certified as green school buildings. And that's up from 1,200 just 1 year ago. So that's a pretty, you know, dramatic increase, especially in these economic times.
It's pretty significant.
Yeah. And as another indicator, we also know that there are now about 9,000 farm-to-school programs across the country, so that's where a school is connected to a local farm or a local farm collaborative and, you know, receive, buy the food directly from the local farm, so the children are getting good, fresh, healthy food and forming those close community connections as well.
Interesting. I want to ask you about the Center for Eco-Literacy. Tell us a little bit about that, if you would.
Sure. Well, we're a nonprofit. We've been around about 20 years now, and we're based in Berkeley. And we were co-founded by Fritjof Capra, who a lot of people may know from his, he has a number of best-selling books over the years on science, and his first bestseller was The Tao of Physics. And, you know, he's somebody who has always taught about looking at the connections between things. So if we want to understand why the world is in the shape it's in, you know, we have to see how food is connected to energy, is connected to the, you know, health of the earth. And so we're influenced by that philosophy. And what we do is we provide books like this one, Smart by Nature. We actually just came out this past week with a guide to the documentary Food Inc., which you may know was just in the theaters recently, and it was looking at, you know, industrialized food in this country.
You know, it's pure coincidence, but I actually saw that last week, and it wasn't until I was researching for the show that I realized you had some connection with that.
Yes.
But for listeners, you know, Food Inc. is it's an amazing film. Not so easy to watch in some parts, but a very, very important film. And yes, as you said, on your website, you've got a ton of documentation that helps support that film.
Right, and also, you know, provides a real curriculum for high school teachers who want to engage their students in thinking about some of those, you know, tough issues.
What role do parents play in sustainable schools, and how can they get involved?
You know, there are so many different ways that we have seen parents get involved. And, you know, there's parents who have helped get volunteers together to plant a school garden, for instance. You know, parents who have gone out and raised funds to put in a salad bar in the lunchroom. And in actually on Lopez Island in the state of Washington, there was one mom who did something, you know, that seemed very simple and had a terrific effect. She had a farm. She and her husband had a farm, and she had an extra greenhouse and decided to donate it to the local school so that they could grow their own food. And this just took off, and you know, the kids really got into it, and it really changed what they were eating to such an extent that when they were served this particularly good meal at lunch one day, the football team, who happened to be there, stood up and gave a standing ovation.
Well,
to
that's
staff,
good, yeah.
Which everybody finds hard to believe, you know, but it was true. And so it's, you know, just a great example how people can offer something to help the school along in this path, and you know, it can have tremendous effects.
Mm. Well, you know, Washington is a green state, as you put it. Are you aware of schools up here that are currently engaged in this program? I looked in the book and I didn't see anything in Washington.
Well,
I did in
Island
Oregon.
School. And Lopez Island is, you know, and what we tried to do is, because this is a book that's, you know, portraying schools across the country, we're just trying to give a sampling from different regions. And that was our example from the state of Washington.
I was just wondering if there was something local to the Seattle area that, you know, if people were interested, they could maybe check out. But tell us, you give tons of information in this book. For those of you watching on video cam, this is a terrific book. And, you know, I'm flicking through here. All of the pictures involve the kids. It's not the kids standing by being taught. It's the kids actually getting down there in the earth and learning firsthand. But what are the top five most important things for parents or teachers if they want to move toward a sustainable school, Lisa?
Well, we've found that the most important thing is, first of all, to, you know, find other people who share your interest and, you know, kind of do a little informal survey and see what people are most passionate about, because there are a lot of different ways to tackle this topic. And, you know, when you've found a critical mass around one of those topics, then get going on that one. And, you know, that one might be working on removing toxins from the school, for instance. You know, looking about where that might be appearing in the cleaning supplies, for instance, or sometimes it's in art supplies or in, you know, what to use to maintain the grounds. Lots of parents have gotten involved in doing a survey to see, you know, what kind of toxins are there, and let's get them out and find what the healthy alternatives are. Another thing is to help plant a school garden, to help establish a bridge to a farm-to-school program is a great way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then lastly, of course, I would, you know, urge people to learn more about the issue and hope that they would check out the book, because it just is chock full of ideas.
Yeah, and your website is really useful and really full of information too. I got lost, not lost navigation wise, but you can kind of flip around in there and spend much more time on there than you need to spend.
Than you plan to.
There's a lot of information up there, and so I want to also look, before we go today, because we're almost at the end of our segment, but I want to look at some of the challenges that schools have run into, and you know, maybe how they've overcome them.
Sure. Well, you know, one of the challenges that people often, I guess there were two that I would have to point to. One is people often think, you know, we're just barely getting by. How can we possibly do, you know, take on this kind of cause when the economy is in the kind of shape it's in? And, you know, there it's a matter of, it's really an education project, because there's been a lot of research that shows that if you look at these kinds of issues over the long term, it actually leads to a savings. For instance, you know, green building designs, they're much more efficient energy-wise, so they do lead to a savings for the school. So that's, you know, getting up to speed on that kind of information is a very helpful way to overcome the obstacle of people maybe, you know, who don't have the information yet thinking we can't afford this.
Right, right.
And then the second is that, you know, because schools have been asked to do so much over the years, sometimes there's a reaction of, oh, you know, how can we take on something else? And, you know, here I think it's important to see that this kind of education, it's not about sort of adding a whole bunch more courses. It's about being aware of ecological issues while teachers are teaching other courses and finding creative ways to remind young people about their connection to the environment. And the great thing for schools and for parents in that regard is that we've found that class behavior as well as grades tend to go up because kids love this kind of thing. They want to be out there in nature.
Yeah, and they probably feel more involved in their curriculum too.
Exactly, and it seems relevant and then, you know, engaging, and then they want to work at it.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I thank you for joining us today. You really are doing great work. What would you like to leave our listeners with today?
How about the website?
The website for sure. I've got that right down here. It's ecoliteracy.org. Ecoliteracy.org. And if you didn't catch that, you can always get in touch with me at conversationslive.net. But there really is some great information. Anything else you'd like to leave our listeners with, Lisa?
No, that's it. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being with us today.
Okay. My pleasure.
My guest again, Lisa Bennett, Director of Communications for the Center for Ecoliteracy. And this book, which is really helpful if you're even interested in just learning more about this subject, is Smart by Nature, Schooling for Sustainability by Michael K. Stone. And since I have this book here, I'd like to recycle it to maybe an educator out there who's willing to, take this a step further and learn more about this. If you'd like to, this is very random. I hadn't really thought about this. So if you'd like to send me an email at vicki@conversationslive.net, V-I-C-K-I, @conversationslive.net, and tell me why you'd like to incorporate this in your school. And we'll send it to, we'll have a little drawing and announce it next week. Who's got this book? Again, the book is Smart by Nature, Schooling for Sustainability. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Stephanie O'Day about making it fast, cooking it slow.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Whether you're one of this country's 15 million unemployed or one of its 30 million entrepreneurs, Kim Levine joins Vicki to share how you can change your life for as little as $500. And communications expert Jill Spiegel will tell us how to show up with confidence anytime, any place. Join us Monday at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See dozens of inspiring, informative podcasts at conversationslive.net.
Does work feel like a puzzle and you don't know where all the pieces are, or you have all the pieces, but you don't know what the picture should look like? Then join me, Denise Rubin, 30-year vet in human resources. I've sat in the boardroom and in the executive offices, and I'll share with you the trials and tribulations of the workplace and how together we can solve the workplace puzzle one piece at a time. Tune in to Work Does Matter, Fridays from 1 to 2 in the afternoon on Alternative Talk 1150. Visit my website at workdoesmatter.com.
This is Alternative Talk 1150. Got it? Cool.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. We're talking about food today. In this segment, we're talking about how you can cook inexpensive, healthy, gluten-free, delicious meals. And it's all done in a slow pot or crock pot or slow cooker, whatever you want to call it. I know everybody calls it something different. In December 2007, my next guest made a New Year's resolution. Stephanie O'Day simply resolved to use her slow cooker every day for an entire year and write about it on her new blog. Well, you won't believe where that resolution has taken her. Her blog has now received more than 4.5 million visitors and averages over 25,000 views per day. She's made cooking appearances on The Rachel Ray Show and Good Morning America and has been featured in Prevention Magazine, New York Post, LA Times, Sacramento Bee, Publishers Weekly, and much more. Stephanie O'Day is the queen of slow cooking. Her new book is called Make It Fast, Cook It Slow, the big book of everyday slow cooking. Easy to make recipes that are healthy, gluten-free, inexpensive, and delicious. Stephanie O'Day, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Vicky. Thank you so much for having me.
A pleasure. I had fun looking at your blog because it looked as though you had a lot of fun doing this. But take us back a little. You, as I understand it, you were a new wife, a new mom, and you're looking for easy ways to make meals that, you know, weren't going to cost an arm and a leg. Is that how you got involved?
Absolutely. When my husband and I quickly realized that we could not eat out every night and we actually had to cook at home, and I learned that I'm not really the best in the kitchen, but I did know my way around a slow cooker, and I was happy to learn that we could eat very inexpensively, and I could put on a big pot of stew or soup, and we would eat the leftovers for a week. We saved a lot of money that way. And then once I had small children of my own, I realized that they're cranky at 4 and 5 o'clock, and it's just not safe to be chopping vegetables and standing over a stovetop that time of day. And so being able to plug in the slow cooker in the morning while I was still coherent and caffeinated was really a good thing for our family.
Mm. And I love my slow cooker, but I must admit I've used it mostly for things like chili and curries and, you know, soups and stews. I was amazed at the things you cook in here. I mean, everything from dessert through applesauce chicken, sweet and sour caramelized onions, curried potatoes, Mexican breakfast casseroles.
I decided that I would use it every day. I realized that it just wouldn't be healthy if we only had pot roast and potatoes every night.
Right.
And so I figured out a way to branch it out, and making the side dishes was a good way. And then we also tweaked some dessert recipes to work quite well. You can use the slow cooker as a bain-marie and put water in the bottom and then insert a casserole dish, and you can make a delicate cheesecake or creme brulee that way.
Well, now, I want to ask, I'm glad you mentioned creme brulee, because that is my absolute favorite dessert.
And mine too.
I will only eat it at certain restaurants because it's not everyone who can make a real creme brulee.
I agree. I think the secret for me, at least, and everyone's tastes are different, is I don't like it when they fancy it up with too much zest. I like the nice, mellow vanilla flavor. So this recipe that's in the book is a very traditional creme brulee, with your egg yolks and your cream and a bit of vanilla. And I was thrilled that it set up so nicely.
Mm.
And that's actually what spurred me to email the Rachel Ray Show. I got incredibly excited, and I thought, the world should know. And see, when the producers called a few weeks later, I thought, oh, my gosh, this is good. My own 3-year-old was in the background fussing, and the producer, who is a lovely woman, said, oh, I'll let you go. And I said, oh, no, please don't hang up.
So, tell us about that experience. I mean, what's it like actually having, they talk about cooking under pressure.
it was nice. That's not a live show. So,
I didn't know that.
We had it all prepared beforehand and were able to practice. So that was nice to do.
So let's look at some of the best uses for a slow pot, because I must confess, I only use mine in the winter because I will usually put something on in the morning, and then, you know, whether I'm going sailing or skiing or to work,
yeah.
And then you come home and you've got something nice and ready at home. But what are some of the best uses for that, and why did you enjoy cooking with it?
I really liked that I was able to attend to other things. I work at home, and just getting everything done in the morning so then I could focus on the rest of the day's events and activities was very nice. And then as far as in the summertime, I was a little worried going into the hotter months of June and July that I wouldn't enjoy having this thing on my kitchen counter. But I found that it really does a good job of not heating the house up compared to using your oven or your stovetop.
That's very true.
And it is less energy than heating up both of those things, and much better for the environment than firing up the grill outside. And those were things that I learned through this challenge. I didn't know before I began that I would like that. But we did fish in there, and I was a little worried. But it by wrapping the fish in foil, it creates a steam packet, and you can pile the slow cooker with 6 to 8 packets of fish and throw in some vegetables, and you've got a nice meal that steams without any work.
Mm-hmm. See, I wouldn't have thought of doing that. I've never thought of doing that, but I'm going to try it.
It was nice, and you also don't get the fishy smell in your kitchen,
mm-hmm.
which tends to happen if you're cooking on the stovetop or in the oven.
Yeah, that's one of the things that does put me off fish. One of the things I loved was the idea of a breakfast casserole, because when you have company,
yes.
You know, often my company is jet lagged, and they'll get up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So,
I agree. We entertain often for the holidays, and we'll have a house full of people. And I get the coffee pot ready the night before and the slow cooker ready the night before. And the first one awake pushes the buttons, and then breakfast is ready, which is very nice because especially with a house full of people, you never know when they're going to get up. Some people are 6 a.m. people, and some are 10 a.m.
So. Right. Allows you to buy cheaper cuts of meat, too. That's a very important thing, I think, in today's economy. And it allows you to use up odd bits of vegetable that you might throw away because you don't have a whole meal full of product.
Right. I enjoy the cleaning out the pantry and cleaning out the freezer aspect of slow cooking. I'm a bit of a cheapskate, and so I like being able to buy meat in bulk at Costco or Sam's Club and separating out the packages, and you can get away with buying a chuck roast as opposed to a more expensive cut of meat because it tenderizes nicely in the slow cooker.
Mm. I actually had an email from a listener who knew you were coming on, saw the slow cooking, and said that she's experimented with that, but finds that her meat is always bland. Do you have any suggestions for making it? I guess one of the things is browning beforehand, maybe. I don't know. I'm guessing.
Some people do brown or sear their meat beforehand. I prefer not to. It just is an added step. I did learn through this challenge that a lot of your traditional pot roast recipes or roast recipes aren't heavily seasoned enough. And I ended up tweaking quite a few traditional recipes to make them more flavorful. I think the low, slow cooking time will the spices aren't quite as strong mm-hmm. as they would be. And so the ones in the book and on the blog have been, the spices are increased.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, you've got 300 recipes in this book. Your blog is called Crockpot 365, the numbers 365, crockpot365.blogspot.com. And I think most of your recipes are on there. Am I correct in saying
they
that?
They are. Everything in the book has been tested in my own home kitchen and then tested in readers' kitchens around the world because I wanted to make sure that if this worked in my slow cooker, would it work in yours with a different brand and a different altitude and that kind of thing.
Right. And then everything is here together in this great book. It's called Make It Fast, Cook It Slow. Do you have a favorite recipe in here?
I really like the desserts. I'm pregnant right now.
Yes, I read you.
I can't seem to not think about desserts. So we made some great Rocky Road candy in there, and we did Rice Krispie treats, which is wonderful because during the summer when I was quite ill from the pregnancy, my kids were able to do the Rice Krispie treats all on their own without worry of being burnt by using the stovetop.
Wow, that's a good idea.
So that was nice. The cheesecake and a chocolate mousse turned out well. I was also thrilled to learn that we didn't need to buy a separate appliance to make yogurt. We were able to use the slow cooker as a yogurt machine, and we've saved a lot of money.
Wow. Is that recipe in here, too?
It is. It is.
Okay, I'm going to check that out because I missed that one. Well, I thank you for being with us today.
Oh, you've
had such an interesting, fun journey, and I wish you all the very best because I know great things are continuing to happen for you. And as you said, you're still slow cooking that third child. So.
I am.
So take good care, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And Stephanie O'Day's book, again, is called Make It Fast, Cook It Slow, the big book of everyday slow cooking. Easy to make recipes, healthy, gluten-free, inexpensive, and delicious. And that's good. They really are all gluten-free because Stephanie's son has an issue with gluten, so she's personally tested all of them. And please stay with us. When we come back, we'll be talking with Dr. Susan Albers. If you find yourself reaching for an extra cookie on days like today, you want to stay tuned and hear what she has to say about soothing yourself without food.
Now if you starve to death, you'll just have yourself to blame. So eat it. Just eat it. You better listen, better
do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Hi, I'm Terry with tsigns.com with a quick tip for you. Next time you're organizing an event, help unify your message and spread the word with great signage. Banners, flags, decals, t-shirts, and more can all be custom designed to give your event a unique look and feel. We're a family-run business who guarantees we'll beat any price and still give you great quality and personal service. See tsigns.com or call me today, Terry at tsigns.com, 206-971-6800. 206-971-6800.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicki St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicki asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's AndreaKay.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
Real people, real life, real radio. Really? Alternative Talk 1150.
You better chow down or it's gonna get cold, so eat it. I don't care if you're full, just eat it, eat it. Open up your mouth and feed it.
Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Eric is having hysterics over here because he got to play Eat It. But I was just listening to that music as we were introing into this segment, and it's really true because as a kid, I was certainly told you'd better eat your dinner, otherwise there's no dessert, right?
That's right. And you won't get no dessert till you clean your plate.
Yep, and there are starving children in the world. Clean your plate.
Yeah.
Well, obviously that's become a problem for many of us because I heard the other morning that 70% of us in America are now overweight. You're excluded from that, Eric, but I certainly include myself in that category, unfortunately.
After the cupcakes, I'll be joining the masses.
Well, coming up next, if you find yourself using food to stuff down your feelings, to calm your anxiety or lift your mood, my next guest has some great solutions for you. Dr. Susan Albers is a psychologist at Cleveland Clinic. She specializes in body image, eating disorders, and mindful eating. She's a member of the Academy of Eating Disorders, and her work has been noted in O Magazine, The Wall Street Journal, Health Magazine, The Washington Post, Self and Natural Health. She was recently a guest on The Dr. Oz Show. And she's written several books, all on mindful eating. Her latest book is 50 Ways to Soothe Yourself Without Food. Great little book. Dr. Susan Albers, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you.
Well, I was telling you during the break that I was I had a very irritating phone call yesterday. And of course, we choose how we react to situations, but I was a little irritated. And so instead of, you know, running to the fridge and getting a whatever, I put the Bee Gees Staying Alive on and did a little dance instead. And it certainly worked things out. So your book here is about finding alternate solutions if we normally calm ourselves with food. I wonder if you talk a little bit about the book and why you put this together.
Absolutely. And you were right on the right track. We have to find other ways to soothe and calm ourselves. Dancing is a great example. I was really inspired to write this book through the clients that I work with. So many of them were aware that they were stress eating, but they really didn't know what to do instead. So if you take out that comfort eating, you have to put something healthy in its place. So this is a book of healthy alternatives. It's something that you can, it's a book you can keep in your purse. So the moment you have that donut craving, you can whip it out and flip through it and find some really great alternatives.
And you've been working with clients about mindful eating for a long, long time. Does it follow if somebody has an eating disorder as a younger person? You know, a lot of girls kind of follow the anorexic track, I think. Does it follow that they're going to have an eating disorder throughout the rest of their life?
Usually, if someone gets good treatment and help, they can really turn that around. You know, I work with people every day who are really inspiring. They have some pretty significant eating issues, and with the right treatment, they can get better. And mindful eating is an important component of that, because we could all eat more mindfully, whether we have a chronic problem with eating or just overeating at the holidays. Because what mindful eating really is it's not a diet. There are no menus or recipes. It's really just being more aware of your mindless eating habits. And sometimes we're eating at, you know, 12 o'clock on the dot, no matter if we're hungry or not, or we're eating while we're multitasking. We're just not tuned in to how much we're eating.
Yeah. And that's what mindful eating means. It's paying attention, right? Taking a minute to stop and recognize how we feel in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard a lot about stress lately. And, you know, we all know that stress has been increased because, you know, people have been losing their jobs or losing money in the way of hours that have been cut. But it's much more than just a mental thing. There's also a physical thing going on there. What's the correlation between weight gain and stress?
There is a correlation that when you're stressed out, the stress hormones flood your body, and they are really responsible for you craving foods to get those hormones back in balance. A lot of people will ask me, well, how does this actually work? Because when you know, food gives them a lot of pleasure. But here's why it works. When you're stressed out, those cortisol levels or the hormones in your body related to stress are elevated. So then you begin to crave food, those fatty, salty, sugary foods. And you can naturally bring down those cortisol levels and put them into balance through relaxation techniques. So in this book, you're going to find techniques like meditation, self-massage, relaxation, distraction techniques, guided imagery, things that help your body to relax and bring down those cortisol levels really naturally.
Now, what happens when we turn to food for comfort? Let's say we're stressed or we're feeling anxious and we eat to calm ourselves. What's going on with the body then? Because it's kind of hard to stay anxious or stressed if you're actually enjoying what you're eating, I think.
Well,
but like it's very temporary. Yeah. It's very temporary.
Well, like I said, food gives people a lot of pleasure, but actually they're really not eating for the pleasure. A lot of times when they're stressed eating, they're eating to numb out or to not feel anything, to zone out. And just because we're so overstimulated and there's just so much going on that we need a moment to calm and soothe, and that's what eating does. It just takes us out of that zone and makes us completely numb out. So what we can do instead is actively choose ways, the healthier ways to zone out. And the tricky thing about eating is that it's pleasurable, but only up until a point. You know, you can only eat so much chocolate, and then you kind of feel sick if you eat too much.
Right.
And it's tricky to find that line.
Yeah, and there's also, it's like a never-ending cycle, because then there's the guilt that comes if you tell yourself, I'm not going to do that again, and you do it, and you get lost in the zone for a few seconds, and then that's followed by guilt, which leads to more anxiety, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. You say in the book that even good feelings can lead to overeating. How come?
Yes, that's a myth that we think that it's just bad feelings when we're having a stressful day or a terrible day at work that we need some ice cream as a pick-me-up. But actually, it can sometimes be good feelings, too, that you're feeling so good that you want to hang on to that feeling and you don't want to let it go. And eating is one way to, you know, try and get that pleasure going again. But as you said, it turns into this vicious cycle. So some people say, you know, I eat when I'm happy and eat when I'm sad. It's just any feeling in general.
Mm. The book is broken into five categories: cognitive techniques, meditation techniques, body techniques, distraction, and connection techniques. I wonder if we could take a minute to look at each one of these techniques. Mm-hmm. We'll start with cognitive.
Cognitive is changing the way that you think about food, because you can actually help or hurt the situation by how you're thinking. So one cognitive technique that when you look at research has actually been proven is doing some self-affirmation, you know, finding ways to change the way that you think about food. Because often we have these mantras about food that, for example, I'll diet on Monday or,
right,
you know, I shouldn't eat that. And really changing that and turning that around. The mantra that I give a lot of my clients is eat, drink, and be mindful. You know, to really, when they're stressed out about food, to...
Hello? Oops, we lost our guest. We lost our guest, and we need to get her back, yeah? So, we'll take a little break, and we'll be right back with Dr. Susan Albers. Hopefully, she might be calling us, but no, Eric's nodding no. No, 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 no. Okay, well, hopefully we can get her back, because, I don't know, there's weird stuff going on with the weather and lightning and all that good stuff, and I'm not quite sure where she's located today. So we'll try. Are we ready?
Hi, I'm Terry with tsigns.com with a quick tip for you. Next time you're organizing an event, help unify your message and spread the word with great signage. Banners, flags, decals, t-shirts, and more can all be custom designed to give your event a unique look and feel. We're a family-run business who guarantees we'll beat any price and still give you great quality and personal service. See tsigns.com or call me today, Terry at tsigns.com, 206-971-6800. 206-971-6800.
Outside the box, outside the norm, inside your radio. Alternative Talk, 1150.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy.
All right, we have our guest back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guest is Dr. Susan Albers, and she's written this fantastic little book called, I say little because it's a small book, but my gosh, is it packed with great information. It's called 50 Ways to Soothe Yourself Without Food. And Dr. Albers is a psychologist. She's the author of Eating Mindfully, as well as several other books on eating mindfully. So before we got cut off by the powers that be, whatever, Susan, we were talking about cognitive techniques. So
yeah.
Can you continue on that?
Yes. Okay. Well, I'm not sure where we left off, but what I was talking about was changing your mindset around food. We often have these mantras that we talk to ourselves about, you know, I'll diet on Monday or I shouldn't eat that. And I ask people to turn that around and encourage themselves to eat, drink, and be mindful. You know, it's okay to eat, and as long as we do it in a mindful way.
Instead of eat, drink, and marry, now it's eat, drink, and be mindful.
Exactly. And okay. In one of my exercises, I encourage people to do a chocolate meditation. And what that means is to approach food and thinking about food in a different way. You know, often we're eating a piece of chocolate and just popping it in our mouth and not even really thinking about it. We're on to the thinking about the next piece of chocolate before we finish the one that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And hoping that the next one is going to make us feel satisfied. So really slowing it down and enjoying and savoring that piece of chocolate in a new way, listening to the sound of the crinkles of foil as you open it up and smelling it. And it's such a polar opposite way than we are used to eating chocolate.
Right. We hear all the time, change your thoughts, change your life, and your whole philosophy is change your thoughts, change your eating.
Mm-hmm.
So let's look at some body techniques.
This is actually one of my favorite techniques. There's so many of my favorite techniques in this section because it's really about soothing and pampering your body. One of my favorite techniques is self-massage. And this is, it can be as simple as taking off your shoe, placing a tennis ball under your foot, and rolling your foot around over the top of the tennis ball, or actually putting the tennis ball behind your shoulders and putting it against the wall and rubbing it around. So it's great if you don't have anybody there who can give you a massage.
Right.
But what you're doing is you're really forcing your body to relax or to lessen those cortisol levels, the stress hormones. And if you do this for a few minutes, one, distracting, it helps your body to relax, and you can make those cravings just go away. We do a lot of self-massage just naturally. You know, you think about it, when you have a bad day, you rub your head or your temples, and there's something really relaxing and calming about that.
Yeah, definitely. Especially you talk about soothing scents. And I remember years ago, I used to sell Lancome while I was at college. I used to sell Lancome during the holidays. And they used to tell us all the time, just spray it in the air because people buy more when there's good smells around.
And it's true. Lavender, for example, is clinically shown to be a very calming and soothing scent. So you can keep a lavender candle in your kitchen. And as soon as you get that urge, light that candle to redirect your mind. And that scent sends a signal to your brain to stimulate the calming and soothing emotional part of your brain. So it works.
Right.
It definitely works.
Right. What about distraction techniques? Now, here's the thing. We've got to get ourselves in the habit of recognizing that we're reaching out for food, right?
Right.
So that we're mindful enough to be able to distract ourselves.
Yes. Distraction is great for boredom eaters, you know, if you have any kind of boredom eating, because you have to get your mind busy and yourself out of the kitchen, your hands busy, so you're not reaching into the refrigerator. A great one is crossword puzzles, because there's some research that shows that crossword puzzles, actually, they stimulate this part of your brain that is very distracting and calming and soothing. Actually, it has to be one that's not too hard or not too easy, but one that's a little bit challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And it can really keep your mind occupied and away from food. Mm-hmm. Also, things like knitting. Knitting has been one that has shown to also, in actually a recent clinical study that came out this year, help to calm and soothe people and keep them away from food. And if you don't like knitting, that's okay. You know, knitting is not for everyone.
Right. It's all about that's all about keeping the hands busy, I guess. The mind occupied. Yeah.
It's a visual spatial skill, so you can do other things that occupy a visual spatial skill. So things like putting together a puzzle, for example.
Okay.
Would be the same concept.
Okay. There's a great chapter in here called When You're All Alone with a Quart of Ice Cream. That's an American thing, I think, eating out of the carton, because I'd never seen it till I moved here. And we used to see it all in the movies when I was a kid.
You see it on TV. You know, any boyfriend-girlfriend breakup, immediately you will see the person, usually the woman, typically go straight for the ice cream.
Right. So how do we are all alone with it and we're anxious. What do we do?
Well, you know, if you can't find some, ideally you call a friend or you get some social support, but ideally you try and reach out in some way. If you can't do it directly by calling a friend, say it's 2 a.m. or whatever it is, you know, I think a nice resort is going on the computer and checking out the blogs. There's lots of other people who struggle with emotional eating. And it can be very distracting as well to get onto some of these great blogs of people who give some good tips, and you really feel like, hey, I'm not alone.
Mm. And these are what you call connection techniques, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do people tend to fall into one category if they eat for emotional reasons? Or do they eat for every reason? Is somebody more inclined to eat when they're stressed or when they're anxious or when they're depressed?
Well, we're all pretty much guilty of stress eating to some degree. And I think probably the most common would be stress, anxiety, and then boredom. If we had to put them in order of the emotions that tend to prompt stress eating or overeating, comfort eating.
You talk in the book about journaling to boost your mental health immunity. Talk to me a little about that, the power of that.
Journaling is a wonderful technique and tool. One, because it, as we're talking about mindfulness, it makes you so much more aware of those feelings, that undercurrent of feelings that's going on. It brings it right to the surface. I had a client the other day who was telling me about her journaling, and she takes it with her everywhere. She, you know, as soon as she has that craving to eat, she does a little journaling exercise about what she's feeling in that moment. Sometimes she'll rate it on a scale from 1 to 10 of, you know, the worst she's felt or the best she's ever felt. And she said it's amazing. By the time she's done writing, you know, she gets a real sense of if she's physically hungry or emotionally hungry. And that in itself is very confusing to distinguish. And some of the telltale signs of emotional eating, probably the one that most people will talk about, is that it's hard to find something to satisfy you. You just don't stop when you're full. You just keep eating and eating and eating. Nothing tastes good. And then comfort eating has that mindless component to it. You may not enjoy the food, or you're just eating it in a very mechanical way, as if in a trance.
Right. I've heard friends say that. I just opened the fridge and I ate till it was empty. A friend who, which is actually really thin, so I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. You actually share 7 habits of the mindful eater, and I'm not sure if they're on, if I got this off your website or if this particular bit was in the book. But I'd like to just get these out to our listeners. The first one is to be aware, which we've talked about. The second one is to be accepting. What do you mean by that?
Accepting that this is an issue in your life. So many people will just even fight the notion that this is a problem. They don't want eating to be a problem in their life. And they just spin their wheels saying, I don't want this to be a problem. I'm fighting it. And once they get to that place of acceptance that it is an issue, then they can move on.
And numbers 3 and 4, be non-judgmental and compassionate. Not judging yourself and being compassionate towards yourself.
Right. And those two go hand in hand with each other. You know, we've got this little inner critic sitting on your shoulder. I kind of imagine him to be a little bit like, you know, that little devil sitting on your shoulder who's constantly feeding into your ear these words of criticism and self-doubt. And we try and use that criticism as self-motivation, like, oh, I shouldn't do that. Or,
right.
Or how could I have been so stupid to do that? But that never works.
Right.
You know, we really have to turn that around and use this much more compassionate voice sitting on the other shoulder to encourage us. And we're really honest with ourselves when we're much more compassionate.
Right. My inner critic is Gollum, by the way. He's the one who's Gollum off Lord of the Rings. So then number 5 is be in the moment, which we have to be if we're being mindful. And number 7 is being observant, so paying attention to what's going on.
Yes, and being in the moment is so tough because so often we're multitasking while we eat. I mean, we're eating in the car, we're eating as we're making dinner and chopping things up and putting things into dinner. We're eating while we're sitting in front of our computer and typing.
Right, right.
So, and what research shows is that our bodies just don't really digest the food in the same way. It doesn't, you don't savor the food. You don't really appreciate it. And that's when you go for more.
Right. Well, I thank you for being with us today. Great information, and this book really is packed with terrific information. I also want to let listeners know about your website. It's called SoothYourselfWithoutFood.com. SoothYourselfWithoutFood.com, because there's a ton of great information up there, too. And you can find out more about Dr. Susan Albers there. You also have another website, Susan. What's your other website?
Eatingmindfully.com.
Eatingmindfully.com. Thank you. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
And Dr. Susan Albers' book, again, is called 50 Ways to Soothe Yourself Without Food. And her website is SoothYourselfWithoutFood.com. I want to thank you for being with us today. And like to hear your feedback. As always, you can reach me at info@conversationslive.net or leave a message on our 800 number, 800-495-7617. That's 495-7617. Or if you have questions for an upcoming show, please always feel free to send those in to me and we will get them answered on air. And before we go, again, I want to wish Eric Ryder, have a fantastic birthday week.
Thank you. We want you
to celebrate every single day, and I want a full report next week.
Okay.
Are you going to share with us which birthday this is?
I don't really want to.
You don't want to?
I'll be 36 years old.
You'll be 36 years old. Yeah. Oh, swap your man. You look very young and very youthful for your age, I have to say.
Thank you very much.
All right, everyone. Thanks for being with us today. Again, you can reach me at info@conversationslive.net or our toll-free number, 800-495-7617. And we'll be back next week. Until then, live well, live strong. Thanks for being with us on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Whether you're one of this country's 15 million unemployed or one of its 30 million entrepreneurs, Kim Levine joins Vicki to share how you can change your life for as little as $500. And communications expert Jill Spiegel will tell us how to show up with confidence anytime, any place. Join us Monday at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See dozens of inspiring, informative podcasts at conversationslive.net.
Views expressed on the preceding program.